Well, it's always the same, isn't it? Every year when the warm weather arrives, we pull out the short sleeves and the short pants, and then we say, I can't go out in public like this. It's a struggle for many of us to keep our weight under control and our shape in shape. And fortunately, there is this handy little numeric formula that we can all rely on to guide us. It's called the Body Mass Index, and it's supposed to tell you whether you're way too heavy or a little too heavy or even too skinny. But if you've ever measured your BMI, you may wonder whether it's really a useful tool. So before you get out your measuring tape, we're going to hear from Ontario Today's Sherry Drysdale, who has been weighing this issue. Hello.
Hello there.
I like that picture because at my the gym I sometimes frequent. I don't want to give misconceptions, but the big sign went up at one point. Summer's almost here. Get ready for your swimsuit. And I said, is that supposed to inspire me or scare
Or
me?
terrify me.
Exactly. But you're not actually weighing the yourself. You're
Oh,
weighing the
God, no.
issue.
Oh, no. Why would I weigh myself? No. I'll be fairly frank with you, Rita. I'm like most other women that I know and that you know. I hold my stomach in when I think people are watching. I am not one to jump on the scale frequently and then broadcast the results. And I do know from personal experience, as you may have found, that buying a gym membership doesn't help you shed pounds or inches.
Not necessarily.
No,
Yeah.
it
Unfortunately,
does.
some of the best things that do
Just
that.
carrying the gym card in your wallet, dear, it's not helping you. But when I enter these relevant statistics into that little grid they call BMI, Body Mass Index, I kind of go into a state of denial.
Really? How come?
Well, because as we've learned in talking about this thing is cited all the time as a measure of appropriate weight and size. It's a universal tool. It's considered to be useful as a measure for population more so than individuals. But even so, Rita, doctors use it all the time. It is widely cited in medicine and in public health, even in insurance type calculations, you know, how big you ought to be for your size,
Is that
for your
right?
height. You talked just a moment ago about something that's a little bit more, what shall we say, undeniable. You were talking about the body fat measurement with the calipers when they actually pinch a little flesh.
How could you ever look good doing that? Even if you were really, really thin. As I do this, of course, I'm pinching myself in the side. Just an involuntary reaction.
If you sit up really straight and stretch, that'll disappear a little.
Okay.
Anyway, Health Canada refers to this. All kinds of public health agencies do, and all kinds of nutrition and fitness guides quote it all the time. This is the arithmetical formula, the BMI.
And of course, we all want to measure ourselves, or we can be curious, right? On this yardstick, I'm less curious today than I was when I did it, to see how we compare.
Yeah, I know that you've guesstimated because we've been talking about this. But if anybody out there listening wants to check out their BMI, you can either do the math if you're, you know, if you're competent. It's weight divided by height squared. You can do that, or you can just go to one of the many websites that will allow you to just enter the figures. You put in your weight, pounds or kilos, you put in your height. And you get a little a numeric value. And if you don't come in at under 25 BMI, then you are overweight, according to this measure. So I have to tell you, it's a downer. You know, we have a mental image of ourselves perhaps as a muscular, compact, just the right amount of flesh and maybe a little extra. But instead, this little formula says, no, you
No.
are fat.
Wagging finger. No, 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 no.
Yeah, and you, I mean you and me and all of us, because I've actually surveyed rather a handy sample population, which is lots of people that I work with and talk to, including the Ontario Today crew.
And you're not making any serious revelations, right?
And I
Some of
won't
us were
name names.
confiding this information to you.
I will say that I have accepted from my sample group some of the naturally skinny and bony people, like, you know, like Stick Lady. I said, no, you're not included in this. No. But also some of the people with whom I work in the Sudbury CBC location. Now, I can't give you any digital images of these people. I wouldn't do so, but I can tell you this. 7 out of 10 of the people I surveyed measure way beyond that recommended BMI target of somewhere between 18.5 and 25. That's the acceptable range. And I actually asked a couple of my colleagues to help me with this story, Rita, by talking about their weight and their height and their resulting BMI number. And I have a couple of quick conversations on tape. I want you to listen to this. All right, my bulky little friend, what have you found out?
Okay, for body mass index, I'm at a website. I'm not going to say which one, but it calculates a standard body mass index. So I'm just going to put in my height, and I'm not afraid to share this with the populace. Given that it's radio. I'm 5 feet 6 inches, and I weigh 185 pounds. Now, I should say I do work out a lot, so I like to think that it's well placed.
You work out almost daily.
I do, and I swim as well, so I try to do a lot of cardio. But according to this, Sherry, at 5'6", 185, my BMI, would you like to read that score?
Oh, it says you're porky.
It says I'm porky. I'm at 29.9, which is the upper end of overweight, just teetering on obesity. Now, next time I go to the gym, I'm going to weigh myself. I might have gained a pound. So if I go to 186, I'm obese. I'm teetering between overweight and obesity. And for me, and those who know me in the building, I try to look after myself, eat well. Always have a bucket of oats here in the morning.
Extraordinarily vain.
And very vain.
Okay, if your doctor has you, in the office for a checkup and says, oh my goodness, Mr. Lessard, you're teetering on being morbidly obese. What are you going to say?
I'm going to say, are you out of your mind? Do you know what I have to put myself through every day during lunch hour just to stay healthy? I would say you got to take this with a huge grain of salt, maybe a little bit of brown sugar.
Okay, let me ask you then. Why do you not want to share your BMI with me?
Because I think it's a bunch of BS.
How do you feel about your own size, shape, weight, and so on?
I know that I have some weight to lose. I've known that for a long time. It is going to happen one of these days, but I keep myself in shape, and my doctor has said to me that I'm in perfect health condition. So that's a positive for me, and I go on that.
Can I just take a wild guess here? Again, it's radio. We can fudge it a little bit. Let's say you're 5'5", roughly, maybe 5'4".
5'7.5".
Oh, wee. You are not.
Wee.
Oh, okay, because it's radio. I'll say you're 5'7". All right. You are not, Jose. I'm looking over the top of your head, and I'm 5'6".
Thanks, setting me. Je te dis.
Okay, you can't get an accurate reading about the BMI when you lie about your weight. Okay, and let's say you weigh 170?
I'm not saying anything.
All right, I'm just trying to get a sense for people to picture, you know. Not willing to contribute to the cause at all, as you hear, Rita.
Sherry Drysdale, you've really flung yourself into something. She really doesn't want to talk about her weight.
Well, and I'm just going to say this. She's 5'7.5", like I am Scarlett Johansson, okay? The other person we talked to is afternoon show host Dan Lessard. You know him. Now, you might call him stocky, but you wouldn't say,
cuddly
boy.
Even.
You wouldn't say, boy, that guy's carrying a lot of extra weight. You wouldn't.
No, he's cuddly.
And now, my own BMI, I'm not going to go into these revealing numbers, but, you know, it would suggest that I ought to be at a weight that I haven't seen since high school. And I get the same kind of read from everyone with whom I've spoken to on this subject, because not everyone is wispy with hollow bones. You know?
Although you did accuse me of having skinny bones through this process.
Just because you have skinny little wrists.
I do have skinny little wrists. My doctor has told me so. I can still wear bracelets I wore as an infant.
Yeah, it's not called the wrist mass index.
Okay, we got to get this back on track.
So I started to look around because of this unscientific survey of mine. I started to look around for somebody who is maybe skeptical about BMI, somebody who would say, don't, you know, take it to the bank. Somebody with a different perspective on fat, on size, on frame, on ideal weights, and on the real equation between pounds and physical health and well-being. So I was looking for someone, Rita, who might be able to stop the shaming.
And in fact, you were successful. We're going to meet that person in just a moment. Thank you for this revealing Exercise?
Not really revealing, but okay.
Thank you.
Fine.
That's Ontario Today's Sherry Drysdale, who is decidedly not fat, but will not tell us her BMI. We're going to swing over now to our Toronto studio and this afternoon's guest. He is Dennis Raphael, director of the undergrad program at York University's School of Health Policy and Management. And he has written, I perhaps shouldn't say widely, on issues of weight, obesity, and public health. Hello to you.
Hello.
Hi. So tell me about your perspective. Are you worried about your BMI?
No, not at all. We calculated it yesterday. Actually, I was pretty happy. My BMI is 27, which means I'm overweight. And that's good because a large study for the Center for Disease Control in the United States found that if you're overweight, you're actually healthier than people of normal weight.
Really? So if you're overweight, you're saying it's not a health risk and almost healthy?
It's a benefit. And actually, if you're over 65, being overweight is actually a very good predictor of good health. And part of this, my interest in all of this, is that I think we have a bit of a moral panic again. And we certainly know that these have happened before, whether it's HIV/AIDS or whether it's an outbreak of chlamydia or SARS. And we're in the midst of a panic about an issue that actually we have some real questions about.
You're talking about obesity?
We're talking about weight. We're talking about health. We're talking about what are the determinants of health. And to focus on the weight issue, the Center for Disease Control study found that overweight people as a group are healthier than people of normal weight. That's especially the case for older people where there's no relationship. If there is a relationship, if you're overweight, you're actually healthier as an older person. And in fact, people have argued that when you look at even obese people, people that are really, really heavy, it may very well be that their poor health is not to their a result of their being heavy as much as a result of their being on yo-yo dieting, which has been demonstrated to really mess up your body.
There is, however, I think, but you can help us out on this, a recommended weight or a weight range for most of us. Surely there is a thing as too heavy.
Well, you have to put it all in perspective. I'll give you an example. Originally, the Center for Disease Control reported that 400,000 Americans a year were dying from overweight issues. Then someone checked the data and found that the figure was actually 26,000, which even then is contestable. So let's even assume that they're right, that 26,000 Americans die a year from being fat. Well, if we extrapolate to Canada, that would be 2,600 a year. Well, 6,000 people a year die in Canada from air pollution. But when you think of the amount of energy and research money and as you pointed out, every time you go to your doctor, being focused on obesity, you have to begin to ask the question, why is this, what's driving this? Why is this of all the issues that are out there? And I might suggest that being laid off from a job is a much better predictor of you dropping dead than being overweight. And there's also a long list of other things. Why is it that obesity and weight has come to the forefront?
It's a very good question. And our guest is Dennis Raphael, director of the undergrad program at York University's School of Health Policy and Management. We're going to be hearing from some of our listeners in a few moments. We're taking your calls at 1-888-817-8995. That's toll free anywhere in Ontario. 1-888-817-8995. Whatever your size and shape, we want to hear your thoughts on this. Do you measure your body mass index? Do you think it matters? How much is your weight related to your health? Again, the number here, 1-888-817-8995. May I, if I can, get personal with you? What has your own doctor told you?
Well, I have a funny story. I went to my doctor and he said, you know, Dennis, your sugar levels are a little borderline, your weight's a little high, your glucose level is cholesterol's kind of borderline. And he said, let's look it up on a chart. And he said, you know, Dennis, in the next 10 years, you got a 10% chance of having a heart attack. And I said, okay. I said, what happens if my weight was all the way down to exactly where you'd want it to be? And what happens if I got my sugar levels down to exactly what you want it to be? And what happens if I got my cholesterol level right down to exactly where you want it to be? What would be my risk then? And he said, let's look it up. He said, you'd have an 8% chance of a heart attack.
Oh, dear.
And I said, his name is Michael. I said, Michael, does this take into account that I have a secure job, that I make a lot of money, that I have a house, I have security? And he said, no, we don't really take that into account. Well, since I know you have to take that into account, I would say my risk of a heart attack is probably less than measurable.
Hmm.
Because what I've just mentioned are the primary determinants of health.
All these other things. So in a way, are you saying that if let's say I'm rich, I can actually afford to be fat?
Oh, exactly so. We've just been reanalyzing data and looking at type 2 diabetes, which, if you follow the media, is absolutely caused by obesity. Well, what we find is among people over 65, if you have family income of more than 80,000, you got about a 4% chance of having type 2 diabetes. But if you happen to be a family where the income is less than 15,000, you have about an 18% chance. And if you then take into account obesity, it hardly affects the relationship at all.
Hmm.
In other words, and this has been well demonstrated, that if you're wealthy, you could even smoke and you come down with a less likelihood of becoming ill than if you happen to be a person who's experiencing financial, housing, or food insecurity.
That's interesting. So in a sense, I mean, if you're poor and living in a bad neighborhood and overweight, it almost sounds as though you might want to be measuring, to measure a population's health, we should be measuring its wealth as well.
Well, it turns out that Statistics Canada does do that in their 2002 report, where they looked at life expectancy in hundreds of communities across Canada. They look at what were the really good predictors of how long people lived. And what they found was, if you took into account education, income, Aboriginal status, that predicted about half of the variation. Let me suggest to your listeners, being able to predict half the variation is really, really good. You want to predict 100%, but knowing people's background and where they are, you could predict about 56% of the 100. And if you then say, okay, we know how long people are going to live now based on social demography, how much more do we find out if we look at the obesity rate in that community? And
mm-hmm.
the obesity rate tells you 1% more about the health of that community.
Hmm. Our guest is Dennis Raphael. He is with York University School of Health Policy and Management. We've launched into this discussion about, I guess you could call it, flab and fitness, and we launched into this talking about BMI. We'd certainly like to hear from you, whatever your size and shape, 1-888-817-8995. Why don't we start taking some callers? We have Patrick on the line in Kingston. Hi, Patrick.
Hello.
Hi. So tell us about what you think.
Well, for the past several years, I've had a BMI between 26 and 27, and I've been trying to get that down to 24.9, the absolute upper limit of the healthy range.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read this Scientific American article, which very convincingly said that you should actually have your BMI towards the lower end of the range, which translated to me would mean losing 40 pounds. Now, if anyone looked at me and said I should lose 40 pounds, I would think they're crazy. So I shifted my perspective and instead thought, I'm not going to think about BMI, and I'm going to focus on athletics. And so next weekend I'll be completing my first sprint distance triathlon, and I found that experience, in all the reading I've done about training for a triathlon, they often say, just don't think about weight, don't think about BMI. Focus on achieving your goal, and your weight won't be an issue. And I've found that to be very, very, very true. My BMI is still 26.5, by the way.
Patrick, it almost sounds like you felt like that was liberating for you.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. I don't think about BMI anymore, and I mean, I could care less if it stays at 26.5 for the rest of my life, as long as I'm able to do things like, complete triathlons and things like this.
What do you think you'd look like if you lost 40 pounds?
Oh, sickly.
Dennis Raphael?
Yeah, the interesting thing is listening to Patrick and listening to his language and his interests. Patrick represents the people that are following all this, the worried well. And when you look at the health profile of Canadians, people like Patrick are not at high risk for anything. Probably, I would ask Patrick, do you have a secure income? Clearly, you have time on your hands to worry about a triathlon. When the people that are most risk for health, the people that are in the bottom 20 to 30% of the population, immigrants to Canada that are having a really difficult time, these are the people for whom the issue of weight is virtually non-existent.
That's interesting. The worried well.
The worried well. In fact, people argue that what happens is all of this emphasis on weight and obesity, all it's really doing, and it's being driven by what some of us call the medical industrial complex, is they generate income for fitness clubs and that can take people like Patrick and perhaps people like me who went out and bought a treadmill. But the reality is that for those that are most risk for poor health, these issues that are being raised aren't even relevant. The issues that are raised are using food banks, being laid off, those kinds of things. So all of this emphasis on weight and obesity and fitness, and he's actually right about the fitness thing.
Patrick, I wonder just a quick other thought from you, hearing Dennis Raphael.
I would agree with those points. And basically, I just think that having fitness goals, for me anyway, they're much more concrete and much more rewarding. I can't picture myself feeling great achieving a BMI of 24.9, but I feel weekly feeling great after completing a run or something like this.
Patrick, thanks for your call and getting us started here with our callers.
Thanks for having me.
Good luck next weekend. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye. Let's
go to Sheila in Guelph. Hi, Sheila.
Hi.
Hi. So what does a BMI mean in your life?
Well, I don't really know what my BMI is, but it's interesting. About a year ago, my husband and I took out life insurance, and they had somebody come to our house to do a physical with us, and we had to fill out a health questionnaire. And at the end of it all, they came back and said that my husband needed to lose 20 pounds and I needed to lose 40 pounds. And until that happened, they were going to charge us more money for this insurance. And you know, I did it. I reluctantly. I said that I thought that was a bit discriminatory. I'm a woman. I'm 45. I've always been, bigger for my stature. But I'm not obese, and I'm perfectly healthy. My husband's perfectly healthy. I've never had high blood pressure, cholesterol, no health problems whatsoever. And this just raises for me sort of the issue of, Is it valid for them to say that they're basing, your insurance premiums on how much a person weighs?
Sheila, this is a fabulous question, and I know our guest wants to comment on this. Sheila, you stay on the line. We need to break for our 90 seconds of news and information, and when we come back, we're going to get a response from Dennis Raphael. We have a caller here talking about how her life insurance was adjusted according to weight, even though other indicators suggested she and her husband were very healthy. We'll do that and more when we come back after this news and information break. Welcome back to Ontario Today. I'm Rita Celli, and we are talking about fitness and fat, the BMI. Sheila is on the line with us in Guelph. Sheila, are you still with us?
Yes.
There you are. You were telling us about your experience with your life insurance, and I'd like to get our guest, Dennis Raphael, to give us a response. He is joining us. He's, of course, with the York University School of Health Policy and Management. What are your thoughts about Sheila's experience?
Well, the first thing that occurred to me was that I happen to have a unionized job. I'm a professor at a university, and when I got the job, I get the life insurance without anything, without any exam, without anybody asking my weight. Mm-hmm. What this illustrates for me is insurance companies, like everybody else in the world, are always trying to grasp on to some way to reduce uncertainty. And considering the hoopla and the fact that if you take 500 really, really fat people and compare them to 500 average people, odds are that you're probably going to lose more money on more overweight people. Insurance companies grasp at straws like everybody else does. But the most interesting thing is, if I were to say, if you were having a program about saturated fats, Canadians all believe that saturated fats cause heart disease, and that's been absolutely blown out of the water. People believe that fiber prevents colon cancer, and that's not the case. and that even fruits and vegetables can prevent cancer. And there's a lot of evidence that indicates that's actually not the case. So I'm not surprised that insurance companies would kind of grasp at this and say, all things considered, why go for Sheila, who's 40 pounds overweight, when I can go to some middle-class person who's running like a crazy person in a gym who happens to be 10 pounds underweight.
Sheila, so how are you kind of adjusting this in your own life?
Well, it's really bothered me. I mean, my husband's lost the 20 pounds. I've lost about 20 of the pounds.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels discriminatory. It feels, I mean, they gave us the insurance as long as we were prepared to pay an extra $100 a month.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I can appreciate that if somebody is extremely overweight, that might be a health risk. But when there's no other indicators, no heart problems, no blood pressure, no cholesterol issues, it feels like a money grab from the insurance companies. And I've even toyed with the idea of going back to them and saying, I think this is discrimination. You know, even the fact that my husband had to lose less than I did, you know, and I'm 9 years younger than he is.
That's interesting. I bet a lot of people are kind of processing your story in their own context as well. Sheila, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We're going to go take this discussion to the gym right now, actually to the Spinning Center run by Lori Swag in Ottawa. She's a personal fitness instructor, and she's joining us now. Hello.
Hello.
So I've actually heard something interesting. Is it true that you don't have a scale at your fitness center?
That's very true, Rita.
No scale.
No scale.
Can you explain why?
Well, measuring weight, I find, is very discouraging. It measures everything, and as people start to move their bodies, their muscle mass will increase, and muscle weighs more than fat. So by watching the scale, you may see the numbers go up, and what would that do, right? It's just, I don't know, it's just not an accurate measurement of true improved fitness.
Now, did you over time come to this conclusion? Like, was there a time when you had a scale and you just thought this is creating more problems than creating a good situation?
No, we never had a scale. We've been doing personal training now for 2 years, so it hasn't been a long time. It's not an old business, and it's more of a lifestyle choice, a personal lifestyle choice, where I just don't believe in it, and so I took that into the business and encouraged. I mean, some of our clients do weigh themselves. And that's absolutely fine. I mean, I'm not going to say you can't if you're going to hang out with us.
Yeah.
But you know, don't base your success or failure on what the scale says.
What about the measuring tape? Would you measure a client around the middle?
Yes, we do. We do that.
Okay.
One of the things I actually like to do, and from my own experience, is to have people bring in an article of clothing that they're not happy with how it fits. And clothing is something that, like in my own experience, I hung a pair of pants in my closet in a way that I would see them a lot, and I try them on regularly, and actually I'm wearing them today, and they're loose, and that's just really from moving your body, and you know, it's much more, I don't know, it's a positive reinforcer, right?
Okay. Now, you've been listening to some of our discussion so far today. What are your thoughts? I mean, do we attach too much weight to weight?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think that we're so focused on the body beautiful that we're losing sight of reality. And I believe, and our whole philosophy is all about feeling good. And when you have something like that, like I find often in life when we reach goals, regardless of what the goal is, sometimes we stop. And if people are saying, well, I need to lose 20 pounds, they get to that place, they celebrate it, but then they lose interest. Whereas focusing on, wow, I felt really good when I came up the stairs, or I feel energized today, or I'm standing up straighter. It's a day-to-day thing that doesn't really have an accurate measurement, and therefore we can never, you know, it's almost, I don't know, it's like Stephen Covey says about always sharpening the saw, right? Wanting to improve our mind, our body, our spirit. So just that consistent improvement.
So it sounds like you might actually think that, you know, someone could be 25 pounds over, a little off the scale for BMI, but still be healthy and fit.
Absolutely. I mean, we have a huge range of people that come into to spinning classes, and you know, I think actually, and I, while this was all going on, I went online, and I thought, you know, I don't know what my BMI is, and I'm actually 24.2. And if I was to gain 5 pounds, I would be considered overweight. And to me, that's kind of, you know, it's very discouraging. You know, I'm not going to, as the other callers who called in said, you know, that for me to be the norm, I mean, I'm fit. I'm active. I teach 3 spinning classes a week. Right now I'm training to do the Rideau Lake Cycle Tour, which is a ride from Ottawa to Kingston and back the next day. And I can do all that. And that's what's important to me is being able to do these things and to feel good. Mm-hmm. And that is what we try to share, or we work to share with people, is having a good time by moving your body, and the rest takes care of itself.
Do you tell them anything about dieting your clients?
We've talked about absolutely, you know, following the Canada Food Guide. Just we don't as Dennis was saying that, you know, like we don't say that eating more fruits and vegetables will avoid you getting cancer, but you're fueling an engine, right? And if you put good stuff in your engine, you will have better performance.
So I wonder, is a little fat good for the soul?
Well, your body does need fat, absolutely. But, or you mean on your body?
Well, all around, I guess.
Well, your body has a set point of which, a weight set point, where it's the most comfortable. And there, you know, for people who try to diet and they get down below that set point, but your body will fight with you to take you back there. Mm. And conversely, well, unfortunately, it doesn't work conversely the other way, because we're so sedentary now. I mean, as one of my one of the instructors I had in the course said, you know, we've become a society of professional sitters. Right? We get up in the morning, we sit down, we have breakfast. We get into our car, we drive to work, we get to work, we sit. We get back in our car to drive home, and then we sit in front of the television.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, Lori Swag, I want to thank you for joining us for a wee bit here on our program as well.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay, happy spinning.
And maybe you'll join us one day.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Go ahead.
Did I mention something? There was a story in Toronto about the really high diabetes rates out in the suburbs of Etobicoke. And the accepted wisdom was we had to get people out of cars and we had to do this. But it was pointed out by Richard Preville in Toronto Life that in these areas where people had the really high diabetes rates, these were low-income neighborhoods where people had no cars. So, yeah, some of us get in cars. Some of us can have time to join fitness clubs. But that's not the average Canadian. We're talking about upper-middle-class people that probably have the time to listen to this program, when the reality is for the great majority of Canadians, and in Toronto, half the people don't own cars. For the people that are the ones we should be most concerned about from a public health or health care, all these discussions are irrelevant.
We're talking about fat and fat politics. Our guest is Dennis Raphael. He is at York University. We were just speaking with Lori Swag, who runs the Point for Fitness in Ottawa. That's one of spinning glasses, actually. In fact, you can see them everywhere, sitting and spinning. Our number here, 1-888-817-8995. I'd like to go back to some of our callers as well. Kathy is joining us. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. Where are you calling us from?
Kamlaki.
Okay, so what's your perspective on this?
Well, first, the reason why I got into fitness was because my mom is extremely obese, and I just took up fitness, a number of different sports, because I wanted to stay healthy. And I think, again, it's about, you know, feeling good, your endorphins, serotonins. I don't necessarily think for myself that weight has to come to do with income or anything like that. And I ended up winning gold for Canada in boxing at the age of 36.
Hmm.
Just because I wanted to stay fit. I never once wanted to actually, you know, beat anybody up. It just turned out somebody said, you want to stay really fit, it doesn't cost you any money, go to a boxing gym. And it was true. I've never paid for any boxing. Now I'm a coach, and our gym memberships are really cheap. And boxing is the best way to get fit and to get your BMI down. And again, it's about how you feel, I think, too. And in society, the big thing is your self-esteem and body image. And again, related to income, you can get that body image, good body image, and self-esteem.
So our guest was saying, just he's made this point that, you know, some of us might have a few more money to spare. We can buy the gym memberships. You said that the memberships are cheap where you are. Can you tell us about the people, like the demographic of people who come?
Boxing, I'm a third-level coach now. I have 8-year-olds and I have a 65-year-old in my class, and they all do it together. And some spar, some don't, but it's fitness for life. There's this new government program that I'm part of called Long-Term Athlete Development, and it's in regards to from age 2 and then just before you die.
Okay, Dennis Riffio, do you have a question or thought for Kathy?
Well, you know, everybody sees things from different perspectives, and the language that the trainer and now that I'm hearing is the language of individuals who have control over their life, who I would suggest without or with the boxing would probably do pretty well. And I do lots of studies in low-income communities, among immigrant communities, and this language and this discussion about feeling good and taking control of my health is just absolutely foreign to the experiences of people that we know are most likely to have heart disease or be ill or show up in emergency rooms. There's such an incredible disconnect between the concerns of public health and healthcare and governments with the realities that a significant proportion of Canadians are living that it's to me almost unbelievable.
The other thing, too, that's really interesting, I'm an operating room nurse in London, Ontario, and when we open up cardiac patients, I'd say at least 70 to 80% of them have that big tummy, that big girth, so to speak, and now the new way of measuring people's health, let's say, or you don't want to use the word weight, but is their girth, and people are saying if you have a big abdomen, that's the newest, latest thing. Measure your girth. I don't know the exact measurements or if you've heard of it, but that's the new thing that they're doing now. And
well, the old thing has been known since the 1850s, and in Ontario, if you happen to live in a low-income community, you're about 3 times more likely to have a heart attack than if you live in a wealthy community. So, I mean, there are certain knowns. And, yeah, I mean, by the time you cut people open, if you had a lifetime of deprivation, they may have a bigger girth. But if we were to go into every low-income community in the world and give free gym memberships and somehow have people feel good about themselves, we would still see the same statistics we always see. So, again, you know, as an individual, I agree with you. I have a treadmill. I want to get my blood sugar down. But to suggest that this is the solution to health, to Canada's health woes, and I'm not saying you are, but from a broader policy perspective, to have such preoccupation with health and weight and fitness, to me, is such an incredible smokescreen that I find difficult to understand.
Kathy, thank you for your call. Let me ask you, it almost sounds like, Dennis, that you might be saying this fitness craze, if I can use that term, it's a modern phenomenon for us. I mean, not everyone in the world is as obsessed with this.
Well, you remember, some of us are old enough to remember Participaction. Remember the healthy Swede?
Yes.
The healthy Swede lives longer. And, well, the healthy Swede also had socialized medicine, early childhood education, free tuition, free pharmacare. So we're always trying to somehow get a handle on health by looking at concrete things we put into our mouth. In other words, we focus solely on the body, and the obesity thing is now in, and perhaps it's because people have gotten smoking rates as down as low as they can, and they need a new crusade.
Go ahead. I'll let you finish up.
I'll stop.
Okay. Let's make some room for other callers here. We're having a really good discussion about fitness and fat, and John is joining us on the line in Napanee. Hi, John.
How are you doing?
I'm okay, thanks. So tell us how you fit into this. What are you thinking about as you listen to this discussion?
Well, I'm just thinking about the link between low income and middle income and overweight and obesity and BMI.
It turns out it's really, really linked in the United States. Less so here. less so here. But go ahead.
John?
I think a lot of the reason that upper-class people are more likely to become ill with overweight issues is what they can afford to eat. They're becoming overweight on better food.
Can you tell us about your own experience?
In my case, I'm, I guess you would say, middle income. We do eat a lot of processed foods based on time, the amount we work, and I'm overweight myself. Mm-hmm. I have a BMI of about 49,
mm-hmm.
and I'm scheduled for bypass surgery in July as a result of the health problems that go with that.
Hmm.
I've been unable to lose the weight on my own, despite the fact that I do exercise and I am fairly cautious about what I eat.
Hmm. So when you hear this discussion about, just in general, I mean, how much do you think in your own life about weight and your health?
A lot more since I've become very heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You have to focus on it more because it's a real problem for me.
Dennis, Raphael, a thought or a question for John?
No, I mean, at the individual level, I'm not a physician. But you know, the only thing that it would occur to me is that objectively, are you able to do the kinds of things you do? Is your general health profile? If I were to say to you, how would you describe your health? Forgetting about the weight, are you excellent, very good, good? Generally, how would you feel about yourself if so much focus had not been put on the weight?
Given the health problems I have, my obstructive sleep apnea, I'm beginning to have trouble with joints. So, I mean, overall, my health is not good at this point.
And, John, just to clarify, when you said bypass surgery, it's gastric bypass?
Yes, the RNY gastric.
Okay. Listen, thanks so much, John, and we wish you well.
Everything will go fine, I'm sure.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks.
Let's go to Larry in Mississauga. Hi, Larry.
How you doing?
I'm okay. I'm curious about all our callers. What do you think? We started out with BMI, and are we putting too much weight on weight?
Well, I don't think there's too much weight on weight. I think the BMI thing is good but flawed. I think it's good because I think it's a handy indicator for many people to take a look at things. For myself, I'm 6 feet tall, and I weigh 180 pounds. So that puts my BMI at 24.5, and I'm just a shade under overweight.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 49 years old. Mm-hmm. From 20 to 46, I weighed 215 pounds, which put me just a hair under obese.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody ever thought that I was obese.
Mm.
At 45, my sister passed away, and I spoke to the doctor. He says, what do I have to do to live to 80? And he says, get your weight down to 180. So I did. I'm at the very top part of normal.
So how does that make you feel?
Well, it makes me feel great because I realize from other measurements that I know I can't get down to what the BMI says is normal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the other 50-year-old, 6 feet tall guys that are out there listening to CBC land, I wear 32-inch pants. I wear a 43-inch jacket.
Mm.
I don't have much room to lose another 15 pounds.
Yes.
You know, I got no butt as it is. So those things are simple indicators of certain things. The fact that the people that I socialize with, we all checked our BMIs at a party we had, and most of them were, you know, in the 30s at 50 years old.
Let's get a thought or a comment from our guest.
Well, you know, Rita, what I'm hearing from an awful lot of people is that I want to be healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be able to live longer. I want to be able to not come down with some horrible disease. And what I say to people is it may very well be that the best way for you to live longer is for you to begin to understand what's going on in your neighborhood, what's going on in your province, what's going on in your community about what I would call the more important determinants of health. And that is, we know most Canadians' incomes aren't going up. We know that housing prices are really getting out of reach of people. And as I've suggested earlier, there's an awful lot of evidence that these are the things that are going to help you live longer or not. So I always have this idea that I would have a pamphlet that would say, what's the one most important thing you could do to improve your health? And you'd open it up, and it would say, vote. Because there's an awful lot of evidence that indicates that in countries and communities where people live longer, are healthier, these are the people that somehow are engaged in their communities and have a better sense. In other words, if you're going to worry about your weight, call up McGinty and ask him to do something about job insecurity, because that's probably going to help you live longer than whether you lose 5 or 10 pounds.
So you of course, do come from a health policy perspective. Do you like what you're hearing from federal governments and provincial governments?
Well, you know, I was trained as a developmental psychologist, so I know all about individuals and bodies and physiology. What we have in Canada, and certainly it's not being disputed, is a tremendous growth in insecurity over the last 10 to 15 years, whether you want to call it job security, food security, affordability of housing. So it's not surprising that your listeners, like all of us, have taken in this message that's being put out by governments that health is your responsibility. Because clearly federal, provincial, and governments have decided that health is not their responsibility. Hmm. So you may have more of an insecure job. Your wages may not be going up. You may be finding your rent is costing more money than it ever did before. But, hey, it's up to you to exercise, lose weight, and stay fit. And I'm not the only one suggesting this relationship.
Hmm.
Many sociologists have argued that as political times become and economic times become more difficult, you always have a ratcheting up of the lifestyle conversation.
Well, it's interesting, and it's interesting to hear your perspective on that. I think we have time for another caller or two. Let's go to Jenny in Toronto. Hi, Jenny.
Hi there.
Hi.
I greatly disagree with a lot of the things that your guest is bringing forth. I've worked at a weight loss camp for morbidly obese kids in the United States for the past few years. And these are all from very affluent families. The nephew of Mayor Bloomberg goes there. And in the past few years, children have passed away directly as a result of their health problems from obesity. And I've seen time and time again, especially with children, if you eat crap, you don't move, you're going to get sick, mentally and physically.
Can you tell us more about sort of the socioeconomic backgrounds of these kids?
Oh, yes. Well, I mean, the camp itself is an 8-week program in which the goal for the children is by just exercising and eating well, not dieting, but just not drinking pop, not eating junk food every day. And the goal is to lose 10% of the body weight they came in with. And these are morbidly obese kids. Yeah,
but do they come from poor families? Like what?
No, very well. Like the camp is thousands and thousands of dollars for this 8-week program.
So the
parents are incredibly the high income bracket of the states.
Dennis Raphael.
Well, I'm sure that you can find morbidly obese people that are rich, but the reality is that as a group, the kids with asthma, the kids in the emergency rooms, the kids with all kinds of physical disabilities are overwhelmingly from lower income groups. So, yeah, clearly when people are morbidly obese, you want to do something. Clearly when people have a terrible disease, you want to do something. But we're talking about taking an idea and so spreading it across the entire population that now 50% of people are sick. And in the process of making all these people sick, we refuse to talk about all these other issues.
Well, you're talking about sort of the medicalization of all of us, in a sense.
Oh, yeah, whether it's cholesterol where do you want to begin? Roy Moynihan and Alan Castle's book, Selling Sickness, is a real eye-opener about how there's this medicalization of everyday life.
Jenny, just maybe a final thought from you?
Yes, I mean, I do think all of that is very valid, but I think, as you were saying as well, I do agree with you, sir, that there needs to be higher government initiatives for healthier lifestyles for everyone, and I think it is very accessible because we're a lazy society. As your spinning instructor spoke, like, kids don't play outside as much as they used to. Humans, us adults, don't play outside as much as we used to, so I think that all plays into it, regardless of income.
Okay, Jenny, thank you for that. I'm going to have to actually wrap things up. Maybe a quick final word from you, Dennis Raphael?
Well, you know, it's not surprising that this has become such an obsession, and it's top of mind for people. Because I'll just give you a little example. In our school, we have a program that deals with these issues. And last year, we graduated one student in health policy. And the student's a great student. He's now at Oxford now. But at the same time, we graduated one student, the Department of Kinesiology, which is about physical activity. They graduated 600 students. So for whatever reason, my voice and other voices like me are rarely heard. And that, of course, could be another topic for another call-in show about why is it that we focus on what I would call a very narrow issue when we know that the broader issues are ultimately more important to how long we live.
That's brings us to the end. I'm very pleased that you had some time to join us. Dennis Rayfield, thank you for this.
Thank you.
Dennis Rayfield is with the School of Health Policy and Management at York University. He was here with us every inch and ounce, I guess you can say. That's it for today. If you didn't get through, please do call us at TalkBack 1-888-379-2552.